It's time for the firm of Harris and Meringue.
I was terrified that I was not going to make the show on time.
Patrick Harris.
Hi, friend.
Danny Meringue.
I'm one of those weirdos.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hi, friends. Welcome into the firm of Harris and Meringue. Patrick Harris with you. That's Danny Meringue to my left.
We'll eventually get used to this whole like quick change thing.
Not quite sure.
And be ready.
That was the most challenging quick change of all time.
Well, I mean, Sprague went quick change.
Yeah.
If you weren't listening, Sprague tore his shirt off on live YouTube and on the radio. Well, he attempted to at least, and then failed, and then eventually got it.
It was fun being out in the bullpen there and
hearing Swag just cackling. I'm like,
cackling
what is
like
going
a little girl.
On in there?
Yeah, I was curious what was going on too, and then I peek over and I can see Dirt, and I peek over and I see Dirt, and he's kind of keeled over laughing hysterically too, and then I look to go, what's Brandon doing? I look over at Sprague, and he ain't got a shirt on. He ain't got no shirt on.
I mean, he can do that.
He can do that.
The rest of us can't.
No. I'm not going to.
That's a big old no.
No. I am not super embarrassed without my shirt off, but it ain't a pretty sight.
Oh, yeah. No, that's where I'm at.
It is not, you know, 1080 the only fan. 105.1 the only fan. I could do feet, though, because my feet are super flat and my pinky toes are double jointed. So they can, like, do this little thing independently. I like how my left hand pinky is all messed up. My Booger McFarlane pinky.
It happens.
Yeah, dude, that's the restaurant injury that I will carry with me for the rest of my life. Is my left hand pinky is screwed from carrying multiple things in my left arm.
You know, it's little things, right? You got those war zones of the kitchen.
War zones of the kitchen. Well, I guess we'll jump on it too. Sprague ripped his shirt off due to the death of the Hulkster.
I mean,
R.I.P. to Hulk Hogan. What's the biggest heel turn for Hulk Hogan? NWO or being racist?
I mean, the racist part of
the
it.
The racist is the bigger heel turn?
Because
I could argue NWO is the greatest heel turn in the history of wrestling.
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
No matter what company you
work for. Yeah, no, it is. But it's so weird when you know, you get to the end of a life like his or Michael Jackson or, you know, cultural icons where you're like, yeah.
Bill Cosby.
Yeah, it's like
Donald Trump.
when Kanye goes.
Kanye,
you know, like,
yeah. The Did. P.
Yeah.
Diddler.
Yeah, well, I mean, I never liked him to begin with.
A lot of people did, though.
I know, but I wasn't. But, like, I've had this discussion with people, you know, we'd be out of the golf course, and the golf course, I've got, like, you know, a couple hundred songs in the golf course mix, and guess what? Jackson and Kanye made the cut. It happens. Look, I get it. Some people are like, I can't do it. I've said this before on the radio. Kanye's first three albums, they can play.
I like the first two a lot. Yeah, they're really, really good.
Like, after that, though, we don't go there. We don't go there. We just, nope. We like, and it's you know, like you talk to anybody who's a DJ who's like 35 or older, it's like, yeah, R. Kelly still makes the mix. It's just like, it's tough.
Brandon just showed me he's wearing his shirt like
a
baseball
coat.
Jersey.
There you go.
Yeah, like a coat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
My wife, old preschool, she really doesn't like the Michael Jackson due to the sticky, icky things around
it. It very clearly, but it's like, he was the defining artist of not like a generation, but of a lifetime. So it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, and she didn't want me playing Michael Jackson around the kids. And now the kids found Michael Jackson and they're like, this guy's amazing.
This guy rules.
And I'm like, well, mom won't let us play it. And they're like, why not, mom? And she's like, Patrick, I hate you. The last thing I want to do is talk to a 12, 10, and 8-year-old about why we can't listen to Michael Jackson.
That's
a tough conversation to have with a 12, 10, and 8-year-old.
Yeah, because, you know, it wasn't a tough conversation for old MJ.
Because he loves you. Yeah, we're his biggest fans. And it's like,
It's tough.
The Hulkster turning heel for NWO is probably a top 5 wrestling moment of all time.
I mean, you could argue it's number 1. There's a pretty easy arc because you're talking about a brand. Like, did you watch the McMahon doc, right?
No, I haven't. I don't need to.
Well, they talk about the.
It's,
you know,
one of those, like, I lived through it. Yeah, I mean, know that guy's
they talk
scumbag.
About selling out WrestleMania in Detroit, mm-hmm. and it being, you know, 70,000 people in there, whatever it was, and everything. Like, you could argue that Hulk and Michael Jackson were like two Hulk, Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan, like that late 80s era.
Yeah, yeah. Like those Hulk, are the three dudes.
Hulk was on that level globally. Mm-hmm. Like it was just you had Russ, you probably had one between the three of us. At least one more of us had to have one of the Hulk buddies.
I did not have a Hulk buddy.
I did not either.
Really? I'm the only one. I wasn't even
I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't have one, though.
You had the Hulk and you had Ultimate Warrior. Like, those are the two.
Most people I knew had a Stone Cold.
Well, or Macho Man.
Or a Macho Man. Yeah.
But the two OG ones were Ultimate Warrior and Hulk.
I think I only ever saw kids with the Stone Cold one.
That's obviously much later.
Yeah.
But yeah, no,
I didn't get into wrestling until middle school, so I didn't watch wrestling in elementary. I'm the birth of Shawn Michaels. I'm the birth of the Attitude. Well, not the birth of Shawn Michaels. I'm Shawn Michaels the champ.
Okay.
Is when I start to watch, and then I get in the Attitude.
So
era.
You're the reason Owen Hart's dead.
I started watching, shortly after Owen Hart died. Yeah, shortly after Owen Hart died.
That's a terrible way to go.
I'm an Attitude Era, and then once WCW went under, I went out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go back and watch some of that stuff, because I want to see Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Randy Orton, and Dave Bautista when they all come around. And so I was doing some research because I was curious how the NWO was introduced into WWF when they made the switch over. It sounds like that was very kind of a situation, because they came over and it was like, oh, no, NWO's here. And I think McMahon brought NWO over to kill the WWE because he was mad at Ric Flair for being a partial owner thing. But then Scott Hall became an alcoholic and Kevin Nash got hurt. And so
wasn't it like a week into?
Yeah, it was just like
Nash tore his knee.
So then 2 months later at WrestleMania is The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, but Kevin Nash is out and Scott Hall's like out of a contract.
Yeah. And didn't something happen to Steiner too? Something happened to Steiner at the same time. And didn't he like tore his pack or tore a bicep?
I think we were talking about
this.
A lot of those guys couldn't come over early on because of contractual obligations. Mm-hmm. They were still like on the books at WCW. So they wouldn't let him actually wrestle. So you could come down and like do the pomp and circumstance.
Do the show.
Stuff, do the show, but you couldn't have a match. Yeah. I think you could like hit someone with a chair or something like that, but you couldn't be billed as a wrestler. RIP Hulk Hogan.
It is one of the conflicting ones. Somebody just texted in one way. I'll keep my opinion after I read it. Roseanne Barr is the next Hulk Hogan. How are we going to feel when she dies? We loved her for her comedy, hated her for the racism, confused us all with her singing of the national anthem. I don't think Roseanne Barr anybody gives a damn about.
No. I did grow up watching that show. That's part of the Patrick Harris's parents are inappropriate in the things we watch.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Roseanne from the beginning till the end, basically.
I mean, Dan was the character.
Well, yeah. I've got a buddy who believes John Goodman should be in every movie ever. He's like, you got a good movie? You want to make it legendary? Put John Goodman in.
Honestly, have you putting John Goodman in anything ever been bad?
No. No.
It's a hard no.
How does John Goodman join the Blues Brothers and is the coolest one?
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
Is there something about John Goodman just rules?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? That movie was going to be great no matter what, but to have him as the Cyclops was absolutely fantastic.
It's just...
Big Lebowski was going to be great, but having him made it over the top.
It's like anytime I see like Denzel is in anything, I'm like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. Like, I don't care.
Denzel.
It's funny, I had this argument, I was probably about a year ago with a buddy of mine. It's like, Denzel's great, but he always plays the same character. I'm like, yeah, and it rules.
Denzel once played a bad guy of the same character in Training Day, won an Oscar.
Yeah. And it rules.
Turns out if you make good guy, bad guy, people really like it.
Yeah.
I like Tom Cruise in, I think this movie was called Collateral.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie Foxx was the cab driver.
When he played the assassin.
Cruise was really good
in
that.
Dude, that was
I liked
dark,
him as a bad
Tom
guy.
And he went with the salt and pepper early, and it was like, oh, you're pulling this off.
High and tight with a little spiky.
Yeah. Yep. He pulled that off. Like,
it was really good.
He could have, like, I remember seeing that and thinking he could have been a Bond villain.
Oh.
Like, that's that. Like,
that would have been a great crossover, especially now if you make him a Bond villain because he's got the Mission Impossible situation.
I will say, I think my favorite, most recent Bond villain is Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yeah.
God, that was good.
He's great. Also, I really like, who's the dude?
Spectre.
Who's the dude from the newer X-Men movies? He plays young Magneto.
Oh, Fassbender.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You kidding me? Fassbender. Incredible.
Yeah, that guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah,
He was a good one.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds was, oh, God, the bar scene.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Fantastic. Gotta do it right.
Yeah. He put up the three.
Yep.
That's tough. A good scene. I think there's a subreddit I follow called CineScenes.
Mm.
And it's supposed, like, the big topic of it is posting scenes from movies that you don't need any context. They're just scenes that are fun, like really well done, but you don't need to know the premise of the movie or see the movie to just appreciate how good the scene is. And before people start dying, they put that up the other day. So I recently watched that specific scene. It's so good.
Inglourious Basterds, here's the hottest movie take that I'll probably ever have. My favorite and the best Tarantino movie.
Incoming. Is Inglourious?
Yeah.
I think favorite is fine. I don't know if it's the best.
I think it's the best. Reservoir Dogs, number two.
I'm a big Pulp Fiction guy.
I would say Pulp Fiction, like, tied for second.
Hmm.
Don't get me wrong, I love Pulp Fiction, it's great, but Inglourious Basterds was just so good.
The theater kid in me loved The Magnificent Eight.
Yeah.
It's a play.
It's good.
A play. Once they get to the cabin, it's a play.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
No,
I really, really loved that.
Don't get me wrong. Like, again, some people, like, they go, like, to me, you know, way, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it was like...
I only watched half that movie, and I was like, I'm going to watch the other half tomorrow, and never did.
It's fine. It's totally fine. If you want to say it's this great masterpiece and deserved all these awards and all, it's like, fine. Brad Pitt kicking Bruce Lee's ass was hilarious.
I also liked Django until dudes got shot with a shotgun and flew into a corner of the house. That's when I was like, wait a sec. You guys really had me, and now the violence is just over the top for no reason. Oakley Doakley, well, we do got a show for you today. Today is Thursday, which means we're going to bring back out of retirement from a Danny and Dusty situation called Tears Day at 11:15. We'll get to that. It was Danny and Rust's idea to get you all to know me a little bit better.
It's a good way to do it.
It's a good way to do it. So we'll have some fun in the 11 o'clock hour. Plus, I got some water takes, and we'll have Web Gems at 11:45, which I believe is going to be its new home. Coming up in the noon hour, we'll give Danny his moment to preach about USC as they will hit media day today. I got a lot of questions. There was a great interview on Dirt and Sprague this morning with Ryan Abraham. So go check that out on the podcast fan website, Odyssey app, wherever you get yours. So check that out. That was great. We'll take a shot at that as well. Plus, ESPN ruins everything. But we're going to start in the Big Ten. Michigan's day is today on the podium. And I think this is... USC has their ability to be the most fascinating team. I'm very, very interested in Michigan, not just this season, but long-term. So we'll start there. This is the firm of Harris and Morang on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 FM. 1018 here, Portland Sports Leader. Don't you forget it. We are live from the shadows of the historic Fremont Bridge, 503-864-6326. That is the fan text line. She'll let you interact with us throughout the entire show. Shout out to the YouTube crowd. I love you cats. Welcome. Good morning. At youtube.com/1051thefan. I had to change my bookmark today of that. I've got no drops today, so there's that.
It really bothers you, doesn't it?
It really does, dude. It really does. Output channel is not configured. Paging Jason Swigard. I got the Tribe on the TV. Cleveland, Baltimore. It's already 2-0. Playing bad center field. Love it, Martinez. Why are you still in the lineup? Can't tell you. Oh, it's because you're batting decently. So we're opening day and the first pitch and the season's over since I don't have that.
You want to give it to Stephen Kwan too while we're at it?
Stephen Kwan's going to be a Dodger and I'm going to die.
I hope that breaks when we're on air.
Yeah.
It's always nice to get the meltdown live.
Yeah, the meltdown live. Yeah, that'd be great.
One time
when Lynch and I were doing... No, I got nothing. One time when Lynch and I were doing the Hot Corner, it was Yankees-Cleveland in a playoff game, and we were cutting to, like, live. It was a Hot Corner. Nobody's listening anyway. And we were cutting in live, and Mike and I had, like, a great sandwich bet, and it was game seven of, like, maybe it was game five of the DS, and it was, like, really close into the seventh, eighth inning, and then all of a sudden, the Yankees put on, like, eight runs. It was the most miserable last half hour of a show I've ever done.
I had that with the – we were doing – we were in the COVID office, and the Cardinals just fell apart in the first round. This was 3 years ago. And it was just dumb play after dumb play, and Dusty's just recording my misery and posting it on social.
Suck it, loser!
Because we didn't have the YouTube set up yet, and it was just like – I'm like, are you like, you want to see what I'm like as a fan? Like, when I'm at Blazers games covering games, I don't like, don't get me wrong, when something crazy happens, I get into it. It's fun. But otherwise, like, you know, something big happens, you look around media section, you kind of get the big eyes like, damn, that was crazy, right? This was full on me on
Shane Gillis. I'm funny, right? I'm funny, yeah, right?
It was
I'm funny.
It was a lot of me just melting down. I was like, if you ever want to see me fan out, it's USC and the Cardinals. Like, those two teams is when, like, I just, when I'm watching those games, that's when I just turn everything off and allow myself to be a fan. And that was the last time, obviously, they were in the playoffs. So,
well, at noon, we'll get into some Lincoln Riley and some SC as it's their turn today with Big Ten Media Day. And that's kind of the theme of the week. You know, we got a little NFL in the noon hour, and we'll mess around in the 11 o'clock hour. But, yeah, I want to give the Big Ten its flowers. That's our conference that we pay attention to the most here in the area. So there's a lot to get to, and we'll start here with Michigan. Look, Michigan had a really rough season last year. It's obviously a big transition as you lose Harbaugh to the NFL, and Sharon Moore comes in, and you're starting to kind of, you're hoping to carry that momentum into the next year. And by all accounts, they had a down season, but hey, it's always great when you beat Ohio State. You know, it's like, as a Wazoo fan, we can have a terrible year. You beat the Huskies, life's good. And that, you know, that can cure some all ills, but not when you're a team fighting for national championships. And I'm going to start here. With how bad that offense was last year, it can't get any worse.
I mentioned this yesterday, and they actually have it over your shoulder right now on ESPN. They're talking about it. Passing yards per game, 131st.
Yeah.
The only teams that were worst were teams that did not throw the ball in the academies.
Yeah, military.
That is it.
That's
Those are the only offenses that were worse passing the ball.
And look, there's no secret that Harbaugh dealt with this at Michigan, too. He could never really find a quarterback.
McCarthy.
Until he got J.J. McCarthy. Yeah. But even J.J. McCarthy had some issues.
Was super game manager.
Yes, there was some, and I don't hate on game manager, but...
No, especially in college football. If you don't make mistakes, you don't make... Like, we talk about Drew Aller, like, making mistakes the worst possible times. J.J. McCarthy didn't make those mistakes.
But how Harbaugh was never able to get a Drew Aller, an Arch Manning, a Bo Nix, a Justin Herbert, you know, a Caleb Williams, maybe not those guys specifically, but guys of that level.
Think about Michigan. Other than Drew Henson, like, what's the big quarterback prospect in the modern era?
Brian Griese?
Before that. Because remember, Brady was the backup.
Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, this is the thing.
It's Harbaugh?
It is not a quarterback school.
No, it's not.
It is a defense school. It's an O-line school. It's like... Every school kind of, like, if you're talking about traditional blue bloods, Michigan, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia is obviously in the modern era. They weren't there for a while.
I'd throw SC in there.
Well, no, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's not me just being arrogant. That's just, SC's one of the
most. They got eight Heismans.
The most prolific programs in the history of the sport.
Yeah, USC, Texas, Oklahoma, Notre Dame.
But you look at each school and kind of what they generate. Alabama, for the longest of time, was not a quarterback school.
No.
But then they Saban switched it up, and all of a sudden they were getting top tier quarterbacks.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you have Harbaugh at the helm,
but he wasn't there, you know, forever.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I still thought you would at least have one, and maybe J.J. McCarthy is the one that we look back on.
Well, if Harbaugh isn't Harbaugh and he's a guy who stays somewhere for 15, 20 years and doesn't have a shelf life of 8 years somewhere.
Yeah.
Because remember, Harbaugh did at Stanford.
Shelf life everywhere. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at Stanford, he had Andrew Luck, who arguably might be the best college quarterback we've ever seen.
He had Kevin Hogan too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Hogan was a pretty damn good college football quarterback.
I think it's more identity than anything else. And because he's a Michigan guy, I think he just kind of went to the identity. Like, everybody talks about, you know, with USC, it was, you know, for the longest of the times, it was tailback you and linebacker you.
Yeah, totally.
And then they had a quarterback era where it was Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez. Like, and again, we're not talking about what they did in the pros.
John David Booty.
I mean, Matt Cassel was literally a backup, and it was an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, you just have...
Matt,
like,
Barkley was a highly touted prospect.
Darnold.
Big time. Sam, like, Darnold.
So you just kind of go to these schools and kind of figure out, like, what... I mean, Ohio State's become wide receiver U.
Yep, they have become wide receiver U. And Penn State's getting back to D-line linebacker U.
Tight end and linebacker.
Tight end,
U.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you just kind of...
Iowa's always been tight end. Yeah. Tight end and O-line.
Tight end and O-line. Like, so you have these identities. Like, Oklahoma's definitely a quarterback U. Like, Oklahoma just, they
do
crank out quarterbacks. Like
John Mateer, number one overall, baby.
And, you know, the Floridas of the world, they had for a long time, long, long time.
Yeah.
You had, and then, you know, the U, their defense was just up and down. It didn't matter. Secondary linebacker.
Still, but they still had Vinny Testaverde and
Gina Toretta.
Ken, like, Dorsey.
Like, they don't get me wrong, but what were they known for? But yeah. Michigan is kind of one of these weird ones where it's like, yeah, we're just going to be so good in the trenches and so good on defense that it doesn't really matter as a quarterback.
Here's my hot-ish take. I'm not a big hot take guy, but this is just kind of my opinion. Look, Michigan won a national championship 2 years ago. Their first since Lloyd Carr in that Rose Bowl with Charles Woodson.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be the same gap, if not longer, till Michigan is really back.
Well, I mean, look.
I don't really believe in Sherrone Moore.
No, I don't either. I think he's more of a stopgap coach, but
and,
I could be wrong.
And when you add the USC's, the Oregon's of the world to the Big Ten, and it's not, you know, 21-17 trenches games, 10-6 games. I know Iowa is still holding on to that, but that's not the new look of the Big Ten anymore. Well, the Big Ten is, remember the SEC, they made that transition as well.
Yeah, but
they
I think got the away from the football is coming back more to that.
But what
just in general.
But what I'm saying is you have to have more dynamic offenses than you used to in the Big Ten. You have to in college football, period. SEC went through this. They figured it out. Now they've got some of the top guys throwing bombs. They got quarterbacks winning Heisman trophies, which don't usually happen in the SEC. The SEC I grew up with. If the Big Ten's getting there and Michigan continues to have this problem where they can't find, and we'll see about Underwood, if they continue to have this problem of not figuring out offense, I think they're in for big trouble for a long time.
And I think you hit the Underwood part of this. Like, when you land one of the top quarterback recruits in the class, it's like, yeah, I mean, I think we need to maybe give them a little bit of time with that.
But, like, do you believe Michigan will turn it around with them? You know, like, Sark gets Manning and does something with, I mean, there's a lot to be proven. We'll see him in a full season. But Kiffin, he's done well with his quarterbacks, and he hasn't had any big-time guys there.
I mean, Dart was
but
he was a transfer.
Not a Manning or an Underwood type recruit.
Well, no, he was. When he came out, Dart was one of them.
Okay.
Like, as a prospect, he was. I mean, look, just look at him. 6'5", 225, big arm, smart. You know,
First-round NFL guy.
Yeah, I mean, he had the bona fides. Like, that was there. But you're right, but he had to go somewhere else to do it. Like, that's, to your point, like, it didn't take right away. So it is going to be interesting to kind of see how that, like, which way does Michigan, you know, kind of take their medicine this year and let Underwood play? Like, do they go
day one
down that path?
In my opinion.
Well, here's the counterpoint to that. UCLA did that with Dante Moore, and it did not go well.
But UCLA, though, I don't think had the infrastructure to do that. And Michigan, in theory, should have the infrastructure.
But also, most true freshman quarterbacks suck.
That's true.
Like, that's just, like, that's the name.
Most of them do suck, but every once in a while, some of them don't suck.
No, I mean,
Herbert start as a true freshman?
I don't think so.
I think he
started sophomore year.
You know, but Manning was a true freshman last year. He showed signs. No, he redshirted too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
good point.
You just don't see it too often. Slovis at USC was the, like, true, like, dyed-in-the-wool freshman starting, and he was very good in his first 3 weeks, and then everything caught up to him once they got tape, and it was like, oh, he's getting slaughtered.
Yeah.
But, like, that's at a program that at the time was still pretty solid, and it completely blew up in their face.
It seems like there's more drama surrounding Michigan that's not on the field that I wonder if that will prevent them again from taking this step. Well, again, part of my worrisome, Connor Stallions has been singing a little bit. Will Michigan be able to get away from this? Will the NCAA come down on them, or will this be something that haunts them for a few years to come? And will it cost Sherrone Moore his job? Because Harbaugh's gone, so who else are you going to blame? We'll get to that next, but first we'll toss it over to the big kahuna with sports.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
He's going to run in hell for what he did here tonight.
YouTube chat getting a little spicy. Make sure you head on over there and check that out at 105.1 The Fan, YouTube.com.
I'll just say this. Duck fan, stop trying to compare yourself to USC. Win something.
We're not doing this today.
I'm doing it.
We're not doing this today. Just,
I genuinely want them to win a title so that they have something to back the arrogance.
We're not doing this today. All right, maybe we're doing this today. We'll get to some USC stuff at the 12 o'clock hour. Danny's going to hand out $100 at the 11 o'clock hour, plus we'll bring back Tears Day and Web Gems at its new home at 11:45. Continuing this Michigan conversation.
I enjoy poking duck fans.
I know you do.
Here's the thing.
Done pissed off dirt just 10 seconds into him leaving yesterday.
Great.
He had a great show, and he just goes home all mad.
Just steaming. Son of a... No. There are good duck fans out there.
Well, there's bad fans everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, it just gets like, don't turn into Texas A&M fan.
Like, I've never met a bad Cleveland Guardians fan, but that's because I don't live in Cleveland. I'm sure there's a ton of them there. Yeah,
it's Cleveland.
Every fan base. Now, what really drives me nuts, some of this is Michigan fan base. I'm surrounded by it, by my kids and their dad. They just like spoon-fed and indoctrinated on this.
I know you're obviously against it because you're close to it. I do a lot of Michigan fans, like long-time Michigan fans in my life. Of the true blue bloods in college sports, I think I like Michigan fans the best.
Of the true blue bloods, you like the Michigan fans the best. You know, before
I despise Ohio State with a fiery passion.
Before I met you, I would have said USC fans. Ding.
Fair.
No, I kid. I think for me, it's USC fans. I haven't had too much trouble with Bama fans, but I can definitely understand where that goes off the rails.
That does go off the rails because it's like it's not quite as...
Because now it means too much to them.
Yeah, A&M fans are also up there as far as being the worst.
A&M fans don't register in my world.
No, dude. They just go...
As a non-junkie of college football,
just be around them. It is a freaking cult, man. It is terrifying. I think I mentioned it the other day. I went golfing on Saturday with a family. It was a husband, wife, and a 26, 27-year-old son. And the husband had on a maroon shirt, and they were all from Texas. And so I was like, "Oh, you an A&M family?" And he goes, "Oh no, we're Sooner family,
Oh,
we're from Oklahoma originally."
Oh,
and he was like,
"In the lion's den."
Yeah, and he's like, "Well, because they were in Plano, was where they moved up here from." And he goes, "You know, if you get in the Dallas area, there's more Oklahoma fans than there are Aggie or Longhorn fans." And I was like, "Oh, just putting it up there, huh? Just taking over the territory." He's like, "Well, you know, when we go to the state fair, it may not be neutral territory because you're in across the state in Texas, but Oklahoma shows up bigger than Texas." I was like, "Well, damn, all right, then." But he also mentioned to point out, you know, the thing we do love though, we all hate Texas A&M.
He goes, "Got that in common."
He goes, "The one thing I agree with him on, they hate Texas as much as we do." So that's there's one little kernel of truth, because otherwise he goes, "And they are a cult." He threw in the cult line. I'm like, "Yeah, that's true."
There's two things I'll get to about some fandom stuff. One, I'll start locally. As a Wazoo alum, you know, you meet Husky fans, and in their world, the rivalry has kind of loosened up with Wazoo, especially as the landscape changes and all that kind of stuff. Big brother, little brother stuff. You know, we see it with Oregon and Oregon State, too. UW fans will try to, like, reach a hand across the aisle to shake, and they're like, "Well, at least we can both agree we both hate Oregon." And it's like, "Yeah, I hate Oregon, but I don't hate them as much as I hate you, loser."
This is a very poignant text. Chip Kelly duck fans were so much worse than the modern duck fan. And that is spot on, because the bandwagon was so big.
Yeah, but I give them a little bit of credit because it was a change in branding.
Oh, sure.
And so to me it was a little more like Yankees or Warriors kind of. Yankees, but the Warriors come around and all of a sudden it's
money.
Sexy and it's cool. So I don't hate them for. And I mean, those teams went to national championships.
The dyed in the wool, like true duck. So everybody knows. So you know, Russ and I, we went to Beaverton. Our colors were orange and black. Russ, did you know a single person in high school that had an Oregon duck anything?
Well, I mean, wow, high school was a long time ago.
I had one girl in high school.
There was some
stuff.
But
shout out to Lindsay Kohler. What up, girl?
There was some, but when I was in high school was also before the Ducks really exploded.
Well, I was in high school in the late 90s, early 2000s, and everyone, you remember, 01, That's that Oregon State team, number one.
Oh, number one. That's Jonathan Smith.
Yeah, so that's Ken Simonton. That's the team.
That's the team.
And not only that, because our rival in Jesuit had similar colors with the green and gold, you wouldn't be caught dead in that. I have buddies now that are like, you know, I've been a Duck fan for life. I'm like, brother, I saw you rocking Ken Simonton jerseys in high school. Don't give me that.
Old takes exposed.
I'm like, no. We can go back to the yearbooks and we can see the photos of everybody rocking Oregon State gear. There isn't a Duck photo in there. Now, you OG Duck fans, I have no beef with you because you've been through hell and back.
The Bilotti.
Oh, dude, like even before that, like when Dusty was doing shows down in Eugene and you know, we'd bring everybody in, it was like just telling the stories of like the history of being around the game. Like, yeah, you guys, I get it. But the, like the under 25 crowd who were like, oh yeah, Oregon's always been this. No, they haven't.
Yeah,
and there's something about that of like having to suffer through it. Like, that's what I think made those USC titles for me in the early 2000s matter so much more. Because when I was growing up, they were not good. It was one of the roughest eras for USC.
Let's see. I'm checking the record books here, and I don't see USC winning titles.
No, they're still there.
Vacate.
Yeah, there's only one.
I tease. There's only one, and the Heisman's back. I tease.
And the Heisman's back.
Yeah, you're from 7 to 8?
Yeah. So, you know.
My maternal grandfather, old Jimmy Hugh, he's from a peach farm in Georgia.
Mm.
Thick accent. Oh, awesome, yeah. Dude. In his last days these days, is sometimes he remembers who I am, sometimes he doesn't. But I remember as a kid, hey, Papa, because he's from Georgia. Hey, Papa, you root for Georgia? And he goes, no, F Georgia. I'm an Auburn man.
Oh, in like, Georgia?
Because he went to school at Auburn for a little bit.
Okay.
He went for a year or two in like the 50s.
Yeah.
And I was so blown away. I was like, I just thought you're from Georgia. You would love Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Washington, so most of us, even in Vancouver, most of us are Huskies or UW, although there's a lot of Ducks contingent over there now.
Yeah, now.
Moving to the burbs.
No, look, if you want to talk about branding, there's been no college in sports has been better about branding since 2002.
And one of the oldest brands that keeps on ticking is Michigan. I would like to get back to this, the Connor Stallion stuff.
Derail it.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. much appreciated, as always. I'm sending an email to the brand man right now. We come back. We'll get on this Michigan thing. What does the future look for them? Can they get out of this Connor Stallion situation? We'll do that next. This is the firm of Harris and Marang on 1080 The Fan and 105.1 FM.
I'm ready, Slick. Are you?
But why? Someone tell me why, damn it! I
must. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll get to Danny hands out $100 to everybody. That'll be great. Happy Thursday. Tuesday makes its triumphant return to help you all get to know 1PMF and Harris here. We're going to talk a little WADA. And we'll get to USC at the 12 o'clock hour as we're finishing up media days for the Big Ten. And with Michigan's turn being today, I will be very interested. I'll go home tonight and listen to what Sherron Moore says. I mean, I have to imagine he's going to be asked about Connor Stallions, right? He's going to be asked about, you know, how Michigan's moving on from that. Is this a distraction and all those kind of things? But the reality is the Stallions came out the other day, said the team knew every signal in 7 games over the last two years,
mm-hmm.
but also seemed to kind of backtrack a little and be almost a Michigan homer and say that the losses and wins were deserved and not because of the signals. And I don't know if I buy that. So Michigan walks into this year with a huge cloud over their head.
Well, yeah, and then you had the Sonny Dykes is kind of the head coach at TCU is kind of one of what caused Connor Stallions to come out and be like, whoa.
He still would have won.
Because Sonny Dykes is like, yeah, no, we knew that they had our signals.
We knew you were cheating.
We changed them all.
We knew you're cheating bastards.
And that's why we rung up 11 billion points on you. Like, do you remember how insane that game was?
They did. It was high octane. It was a weird Michigan game to watch because it's not what I know of Michigan.
No, and that game was like Monstars in Space Jam. It was like kind of lopsided or kind of one-sided. It was like how many points TCU just kept putting up. You're like, I thought this Michigan defense was pretty good. What the hell is happening?
I don't know if I've ever seen Michigan in a run-and-gun game.
No. And now they matched it because TCU's defense was meh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you had Duggan and Johnston that were out there just absolutely cooking. But, yeah, the Connor Stallions have it all, and eventually this will go away, thank God. But, yeah, I mean, if you know what's coming, even if they have some little wrinkle to it, it's like, you know, have you ever seen any like the podcast with like Luke Kuechly?
No. Love so, Luke Kuechly.
Kuechly might be the smartest linebacker that's ever played the game.
That's what they say. A lot of people, like, one of the greatest football minds. Injuries weren't his best friend.
No.
Great, fun player to watch. Undersized a little.
Just an absolute monster.
But played 5 inches and 100 pounds heavier than he was.
Just an absolute freak because he got there before everybody else. And there's always these clips of, like, one player having a back and forth with Kuechly, like, how did you like, do this? And he's like, oh, I knew it was coming because of this, and this. And it's like, yeah, if you have an understanding and your ability to process and your preparation is going to lead you down, you go from the swath of the path being a mile wide to a meter wide, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, I kind of want to back up to the point you said that this will eventually go away. I do agree with you, but I don't know. Maybe it's recency bias. Why do I feel like there's always something hanging over Michigan? Is it just a recency bias?
No, I think it is a recency bias because there was like the Lloyd Carr era. Was there anything really hanging over the program, like
no,
in their heyday?
But no, like, but we knew. I mean, we knew what was going on there.
Well, that's not just there; it was everywhere.
And
I mean,
Rich Rod was a kind of a disaster, but Harbaugh couldn't coach there a season without there being some whisper of some wrongdoing.
Well, but that's also
recruiting violation. But it's getting
also
caught.
That's also Harbaugh.
I know, and some of it is more getting caught. Like everybody's doing the same thing. They just got caught. But if they're the ones constantly getting caught, no matter what it is,
be sneakier.
It leads me to that phrase you never want to hear: a loss of institutional control.
Well, here's the thing.
And is Sharon Moore the guy that's going to do that? I don't know about that.
But here, this is it for me. The SEC is Russia, where
okay, everybody hates them. The world power that you want to go away,
but all of Russia, as far as like what they put out there, is insular. Everybody in lockstep, even if it's
they're forced to.
But that's what I mean. Like, so you don't rat out the other guy because the other guy's going to rat you out because that's what's happened in the Big Ten.
Yeah, don't like, go to meet. If you're in Russia, don't go to meetings above the second floor.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's it's like, even if you hate it, hey, everybody knew Auburn got Cam Newton $200,000.
No,
like,
it was free. It was Mississippi State that got in trouble. Stephen Kwan with a solo home run.
But my point being, like, everybody knew the deal, but everybody also knew the bagmen of the SEC were the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the deal.
Yeah, your Trojans got caught eventually.
And the problem was
SMU in the 70s, 80s.
In both cases, in SMU and USC,
Tarkarian,
there was the jealousy got too far.
Sure, you get sloppy.
Well, not even that. Like people start talking because look, I mentioned this the other day. That 05-06 USC team, I think it was either 44 or 46 players on the roster went to the NFL.
Say that again.
It was the 05-06 USC team?
Oh, 75% went to the NFL.
44 or 46 players. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this yesterday.
Went to the NFL.
That's great.
When you have that much talent, you know what the deal is.
A little angry.
When you put you look at that USC Texas game, that national title game. Number one, it's the best college football game I think has ever existed.
I loved Boise State, Oklahoma.
Don't get me wrong, it's great.
I love that game.
But I'm talking about like just pure unabashed holy crap from open
what
the start. Like, what is this? And the
Reggie
collection
tosses the ball backwards and everybody's like, what are you doing?
The collection of talent. We will never see that collection of talent on a college football field ever again.
Cedric Benson at running back for Texas, I believe.
I think the combined number was like 83 players.
That's
from
insane.
Both teams that went to the NFL. It was, and it's not just like, oh, they went to the NFL. There's 40 like Pro Bowlers. And you're just like, what the hell is this? And like that, but when you got, and same thing happened in Texas. They didn't get caught,
mm-hmm.
but they ran into it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
and there were a lot of dark years at Texas for a long time.
And that's what ends up happening is
Tom
like,
Herman.
It just starts falling on itself.
And I think that's where Michigan is.
Yes.
And I don't know how 100%. I don't know how they pull out of this. Look, I'm sure everybody says Sharon Moore is a great guy. I mean, he cried when they won a game because Harbaugh was suspended, mm-hmm. you know, and he's clearly a culture guy for the players, but they're going to need something institutionally. Look, I know I tease this. The NCAA is not going to do anything.
Well, they don't have the power to anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You can just sue them and drag it out and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Underwood could be the big change for them.
And that's the thing is because
that will erase everything. If Underwood comes out and balls out like he's supposed to in theory, that will change everything.
And it doesn't have to be this year. Like as a true freshman, I'm never going to look at a true freshman quarterback and be like, you need to do this because it just doesn't happen. You know, one thing that Andrew Nemec always says, he talks about in recruiting, it's momentum, momentum, momentum. Once you get momentum going, how do you capitalize on it? When Lanning came in and started like continuing the momentum from Cristobal on the recruiting trail and started to really build it up, I was like, okay, there's something here. And then now they've had, you know, back-to-back-to-back top 10 classes? It's like, yeah, it's starting to do something. Mm-hmm. The same thing you talk about Texas, getting back on the map and being able to recruit and land guy after guy after guy at positions that matter and not have them be the A&Ms where, yeah, they got guys with quote-unquote stars.
Who then go end up playing somewhere else.
Or they completely bust out. Or they spend a metric crap ton of money on guys and they don't pan out and you're going, uh-oh. Then the boosters start fighting. It's like we talked about yesterday with Oregon. Being built on a solid foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't worry about Oregon with this stuff because they're not. There's the Willie Lyles of it all isn't popping up anymore.
Yeah,
Oregon wasn't immune to this.
Yeah, check out yesterday's show if you missed any. We talked a little bit after Dan Lanning hit the podium. Yeah, the infrastructure there is built. It's not at Michigan. The infrastructure's built at Ohio State. I think Sark's got it rolling at Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, Cristobal is starting to kind of get there in Miami. We'll see what their win-loss record looks like this year. Could say the same about Lincoln Riley. Mm-hmm. Seems to be turning it around maybe a little later than we expected.
Took him 3 years to put it together.
But potentially brings it around. I don't see that for Michigan in the next 5 years. Which means if Sharon Moore is out at the end of this year or the out of next year, who's the next guy they're going to bring in? I'm not sure how exciting that job is.
I mean, it is.
Were more exciting, Sharon Moore would not be the head coach.
No, I think that was a Harbaugh favor and a transition of power that was going to be more seamless.
I gave you a natty, so do what I say.
Kind of, yeah. But if you're talking about Michigan could have gone, you know, 1-11, it's still going to be one of the top five most desired jobs in the country. It just is.
Yeah, it is Michigan.
It just is.
Maybe I'm just salty about Michigan.
That's kind of just because of the family stuff.
Yeah, I love my kids. They got terrible football takes. What? They hate the state of Ohio. I was like, whoa, Ohio's great.
It's not. Guardians.
I root for the Guardians.
That's where this comes from. It always comes back to baseball with you.
And I've been to the city of Cleveland. The city of Cleveland is lovely.
Look, despite Cleveland rocks, it does not rock.
Cleveland, the city of Cleveland's great.
Look, Joakim Noah had it right. Who the hell wants to go to Cleveland?
I do. I like Cleveland.
Nobody wants to go to Cleveland.
All right, when we come back, second hour coming up, Danny's going to give out $100 for everybody, plus it's Tears Day. We'll get to all that next. Loaded second hour. Don't go anywhere. The Firm of Harrison Morang on 105.1 FM, the Fan Sports Network.